Next up, we have Andrew Clark. He's a designer at Stuff and Nonsense, an author known for his design work and contributions to the web industry. For over 15 years, he's made designs for clients, written 2 books, and given over 50 presentations, and a few more on that now probably as well, to web designers, developers all over the world. He's also got probably the best talk title I think we've had so far from so far. So his talk title tonight is "Take Your Stinking Paws Off My Design, You Damn Dirty Developers."
If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know that my voice has been going all day. I woke up this morning and I couldn't actually say anything. So I've been self-medicating with an overdose of Strepsils. And what can go wrong with that? Apparently diarrhea is the first thing that people point out on Twitter. So I don't think the beer's going to help with that either, but maybe it will. Could be the thing. So if I can last 20 minutes, it'll be a bloody miracle. Thanks for coming out, by the way. Thanks for coming to heckle tonight. Heckling is mandatory. We don't take these things too seriously. I'm very happy to be here. I've been looking on for the last eight geek nights, being really jealous about people that were here. And now here we are. So this is very good. First thing, a couple of things before we start. If you're a freelance developer who knows HTML and CSS and JavaScript and Perch, please talk to me before we go, because I think I might actually hire somebody. It's getting to that point. The second thing is there anybody here who's been signing me up to over 50s shit? Please, own up. I've been accusing Dan Davis for the last 2 months. But apparently, no, I've been getting phone calls from Sun Alliance. Hello, Mr. Clark. I'm just filling up about the inquiry you made on our website. No, I'm not over 50. Not quite there yet. The other one I had, to top it off, on Monday. Hi, Mr. Clark. It's John from Handy Stairlifts. Bastards. Whoever this is. Please, stop. Stop now. It wasn't funny. Anyway, I'm going to talk about taking your stinking paws off my designs, you damn dirty developers, which it's part, just part of a new talk that I've been giving to hopefully help developers better understand certain design issues. That's what it's about. And this talk normally lasts an hour, like rallies. And I normally talk about typography and color contrast and accessibility and ratios and layout proportions and things like that. So I'm going to try and, instead of trying to squeeze everything down into kind of 20 minutes, I'm just going to talk about one aspect tonight, which is possibly what I think is the most important one, and that's typography. Because that's usually my number one focus when it comes to making a design, and it's also the number one thing that usually goes wrong when somebody else codes up a design that I've made. So I want to just talk about some typographic issues, really, for the next kind of 20 minutes. The full speaker deck is up. The deck is up at speakerdeck.com/malarkey. So if you want to refer to that at some point, the whole kind of hours extravaganza is up there. Now, this title comes, obviously, from... it's a famous line from what is one of my favourite films, Planet of the Apes, the original 1968 Planet of the Apes. It's not my actual favourite film. That's Gone with the Wind. Can you believe that? Love Gone with the Wind. So love Gone with the Wind. But if you haven't seen Planet of the Apes, the original 1968 film, don't feel bad. I'm not going to hold it against you. You just probably won't get hired if you understand HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and a bit of Perch. You know, we have limits, obviously. And this is a line from Charlton Heston's, for those of you who have seen it, you'll know this, but for those of you who haven't, this is a line from Charlton Heston's character, Taylor. Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape. And I don't know whether you know, but I, you know, I am actually quite a large Planet of the Apes fan. I mean, not large physically, obviously, but, you know, I like Planet of the Apes quite a lot. I'm actually, believe it or not, the second biggest Planet of the Apes nerd in the UK. Apparently the biggest Planet of the Apes in the UK is Shane Ritchie, who plays Alfie Moon in EastEnders. He's the number one Planet of the Apes nerd. He owns the cart that Charlton Heston got put in by the gorillas in the first movie. He got, apparently, I've read something about this. He got smashed out of his head on Jack Daniels when he was going through a particularly messy divorce from Colleen Nolan, which, you know, you can imagine, obviously. He got completely blathered on Jack Daniels and was on eBay, which is always a dangerous thing. The most I've ever bought is some of those little plastic figures, which I regretted the following day. He bought a cart. It was £8,000. And then he spent £12,000 having it shipped to the UK. And it now sits in his barn, apparently covered in squirrel shit, which, you know, what else are you going to do with it? Anyway, we digress slightly because we should be talking about typography. The other kind of facet of this talk is really about how designers and developers can work better together, really, to get better results and to reduce a lot of the frustrations that I know that designers and developers both feel when it comes to actually implementing designs. And that's because for years we've used these things to communicate our designs. PSDs, comps, I call them static visuals. And I've talked about this a fair bit in the past, but this type of visual is, it's really never been the best tool, the best medium for communicating a design. And if you think about all of the things that it's actually impossible to communicate through this static medium, these visuals, they really are bringing a knife to a gunfight. And it's this lack of ability, really, to communicate through static visuals. It's been amplified greatly by responsive design. And there are now just too many facets of a design to communicate effectively through this kind of static medium. There are too many opportunities for the nuances of a design to get lost in translation between designers and developers. So, I mean, this is how I do a lot of my design work now. I use a combination of graphical tools, code, actual real devices. I've been selling a load off because I just went a bit crazy. And when I'm working, there's really nothing that's more important to me in a design than typography. So I do things like I decide on type sizes before we even open up something like Photoshop or Fireworks. And it's testing these things even before we start working in the graphical tool to understand actually how readable, for example, these typefaces are going to be when we get them onto the real device, rather than, you know, making something up in Photoshop at the beginning and then hoping that it's actually going to end up that way when it comes to the final implementation. So what I'm going to do is to focus on several aspects of typography that I know are difficult to communicate through the medium of a static visual. And these are the things that often get misunderstood, or they're things that get missed off altogether. So that's what we're going to talk about. So let's start off. Hopefully some of these things... Oh, do you know, I don't know whether the contrast is going to work on this screen, but we'll give it a go. Let's start off with something that is called the measure. Anybody heard of the measure before? Now, the measure is the name that's given to the width of a body of type. Does anybody know why it's called the measure? No? Okay, so back in the day, back in the days when people used to do hand metal typesetting, you had the width of a column. Let's say it was the width of a newspaper column. And the typesetter, who was picking out little bits of metal type or was placing them to go into those columns, needed to know how much type he was going to be able to, needed to actually take and then fit into those columns. So he had this tool, which was a little sort of rectangle of metal, and it had a scale on it, and he had a little clip, and he used to wind that down to the width of the column so that he could only fit that number of letters in. And that's why it's called the measure. Cool. Anybody know why things are called uppercase and lowercase letters? Oh, more people know this. Yeah, that's right. It's when the typesetter was actually getting the type to put into that measure, he'd be taking things from the uppercase or from the lowercase. A little bit of kind of type nerd trivia. If you look at something like this block of text here, this type really is too wide to be read comfortably. So we can alter the column. We can alter the measure by making the column narrower. That's one way of doing it. But if we increase the type size, we're going to reduce the number of words, the number of letters, number of characters in that line, and therefore we're going to affect the measure as well. Even if we do that, the type is still really too uncomfortable to read for long periods. So an optimum measure is something like 2 to 3 alphabets, something around 52 to something like 78 characters. That includes the space. So if you look at something like this, this measure is actually 56 characters. Now, one thing to realize is that when we change the measure to improve readability, we also have to change what used to be called in kind of metal typesetting, leading. Anybody know why it's called leading? It was the strips of lead between each line. Now, of course, in CSS terms, we call it line height. The two things are not actually the same. But when we change the measure, we should also change the line height when we write our CSS. Because if the line height isn't optimal, it makes reading really difficult if the line height is either too tight or too loose. Because what we need to do when we read is we have to really concentrate to find the start of the next line from the end. So here's that kind of too tight leading again, line height again. And then simply by increasing the line height, we can improve readability. So really simple things. So particularly when it comes to liquid layouts, responsive layouts, when we're changing the width of the content block, we should be thinking about leading, we should be thinking about line height at the same time. Now, we might not consciously notice those differences, but we should be aware of that when we're writing styles. So these details, for example, this is really the difference between 1.5 and 1.6 in the line height in the CSS. So it's a tiny little increment, but really makes a huge difference. Now, we often see line height go wrong when it's set too loose in things like sidebars or narrow columns. You see this all the time. You know, when you've got a box out or a sidebar with that kind of narrow column. Because again, what happens is our eye has to really consciously search for the start of that next line. So here's that too loose line height again. And we can improve readability dramatically just by closing it up. So again, if we've got two content blocks, you've got a main content, you've got a sidebar, even if you're still using the same type size, you're still using the same typeface in both of those columns, you should have different line height depending on the column width. Now, the other thing it's important to remember is writing different styles for reversed out content. So here's a normal paragraph of text, and when I reverse it out, in this particular case, when it's white text on black, actually white text on sort of pinky purple, really, here, the text becomes much, much more difficult to read. So what we need to do is we need to increase the line height here, just from 1.3 in this particular case to 1.4. And we can also improve readability by increasing what's called the tracking. And in CSS terms, that's word spacing, which we can control in CSS. So here's just a little bit of code for anybody that was feeling like, you know, you hadn't seen some for a while. It's been since, what, 6 o'clock you knocked off, probably. So standard paragraph with a line height of 1.3. We'll reverse it out. We'll increase the line height just a little bit to make that more readable and just increase the word spacing to one rem. Simple stuff. Now, another thing to remember, just generally, sans serif typefaces generally require a looser line height than serifs. So serifs really benefit from a tighter line height. So let's just talk a little bit now about glyphs, typographically correct glyphs, because these are the things that go wrong all the time. And I get very, very nerdy about this. Let's start off with a hyphen. That's a hyphen, this guy over here. That's a common hyphen. Why do we use hyphens? We use them to break words over two lines. Or we can use them to actually combine two words together. These are the proper function of a hyphen. A dash, however, is something completely different. This is what's called an EN or an N dash, and it's just slightly longer than your common or garden. That sounds like I should be doing biology, shouldn't I? It's like David Bellamy, like this, like finding caterpillars. It's like, grapple me, grape nuts. Than your common or garden hyphen. Now, why do we use an N dash? Well, we can use an N dash to denote a range of things. So, for example, age 9 to 10, or pages 90 to 100, or dates. Or we can even use it in as the equivalent of the word to. So if we're saying journey, you know, Earth to Mars, then you can use an EN dash for that. Quite cool. So there's some HTML. You can get these from the slides, but there are some shortcuts. Who uses text expander? Oh, you sad people. More people should have put their hands up there. Text expander is a wonderful tool for the Mac. It's probably available for PC, but who knows? I don't know. Some weird guy earlier had one. Text expander is wonderful because you can actually, I know that probably the Mac can do this natively, but you can actually store snippets, including the entity values. So you know you've got all those weird kind of contortionist keystrokes to actually get correct punctuation on the keyboard. Well, I can never remember what the, you know, an hash 8217 or whatever the actual entity value is. So the little trick is to actually use text expander for that. Create a little snippet, and then I use the, it's called the section key. It's that little kind of double S key that's on the top left-hand side of the keyboard, just underneath the escape. It's actually called the section key. I had no idea what it does, but that's my text expander key. So if you hit that and then do the contortions, and it automatically bings and puts in the entity value, which is quite a cool little thing. So you don't have to remember this kind of crap. Anyway, longer still, we have an EM dash. This is my favourite. You use an M dash to denote a pause or a separate train of thought within the same sentence. And you can separate M dashes with their surrounding content, either with no spaces at all, which is the typographically correct way of doing it, or you can use hair spaces. That depends on the typeface. So there's a deliberate mistake in this slide. We're going to come back to that in a minute. So we can use an M dash to denote a pause or a separate train of thought within a sentence. Oh, and here's some entities that go with that as well. But there's a couple of things that you might not know that we can use M dashes for. Two adjacent M dashes can be used to replace or indicate missing letters in a word. So ape something. I'm not going to say. Let's talk something else that I go ape shit about. This this is what? This is a prime, this thing is called. It's a prime. This is a double prime. And we use these to denote different things. So, for example, here we're using it to denote a single prime for feet and a double prime for inches. This, by the way, is the actual standing height of a gorilla. Thought I saw one when I came from the station earlier on. A single prime, you can also use it to denote minutes, and a double prime for seconds. I never knew that until fairly recently. But one thing that primes are not and never will be, nor ever, are quotations. Never ever used for quotations, but we see this all the time. It drives me nuts. I tell you what, the thing that really annoys me, and they should know better by now, the BBC, when they have that little ticker that comes off the bottom of BBC News, every time I see it, I want to throw things at the TV. Or maybe that's David Cameron. I'm not quite sure. Quotations are actually curly. They look like sixes. They look like nines. And these are the proper entities for quotations. These are the correct entities, by the way, for curly quotes. You don't have to remember this kind of stuff. You get text expander to do it. Use the right glyphs in the right places. This is another example. These are not, in fact, three dots. This is one single entity, and it's called an ellipsis. It's very, very useful for Twitter if you want to save on two characters with your dot, dot, dot. Just learn how to do the ellipsis key. And it's actually used to mark a continuation. There's something else that's coming. It really isn't three periods. It just isn't. Okay, a couple more things. A couple more kind of little typographic design details that often get missed in that kind of translation between PSD to finished web pages. I see this all the time. We see it really quite often in body copy. Paragraphs are way too loosely spaced. And this tends to be because we use the same line height, we use the same margin bottom set as line, as a full line's height between paragraphs. So in this particular case, it's 1.5 or 1.5 em. So in longer form copy, if you're writing an article, blog post, anything which is kind of long read copy, you can improve readability dramatically by halving that margin that goes underneath between paragraphs. So, you know, just reduce the bottom margin. Here you've got standard paragraphs. Let's say we HTML5 article element, descending selector. We're just going to halve that margin bottom. Makes a huge difference. And it's something that can really often get easily missed when you're trying to translate something from a comp. So here's a quick comparison between that full line height and the half line height. Now, another thing to watch out for, designers often will want to indent rather than use spaces when it comes to denoting the start of a paragraph. But often we see the mistake when somebody puts a text indent on the P element. Never, ever, ever do it on the first paragraph of every section. It's always for subsequent paragraphs. All right, let's talk about the typographic detail that I think causes the most argument, certainly between me and my clients. I literally had a half-day meeting about this with the Home Office. Look at this unordered list. Now, this is where the contrast is going to either work or it doesn't work. So we look at that unordered list. You see how... No, we're not getting the... we're not seeing the contrast. See how, when we're reading... Imagine there's some words here. Our eye has to come down that left-hand reading edge, and then it has to indent when it gets to the list, because this is where the markers, this is where the bullets are. And then it goes down, and then carries on down that left-hand edge. Longer sentences, they make this even worse. Now, you're going to have to imagine, I'm going to have to maybe flick between the two just to sort of illustrate this. But imagine our left-hand reading edge here, we have to come in, and then down, and then back out. So every time our eye gets to the end of the line, it has to then really consciously try to find the start of the next line. And this can make reading really quite tedious. Something like that. Now, these tiny decisions, they can make the difference between something being a pleasure to read and something which is actually quite tedious to read. So instead, what we need to do, we should do, if we're thinking about typographical correctness, is actually to try to preserve that clean left-hand reading edge by putting the markers out into the margins. You would not believe how much trouble this has caused me with clients. Mainly because things like Microsoft Word have just taught them such bad habits. If we pull things out into the margin, my notes actually say here, this makes reading easier and the page look cleaner. Well, it certainly does that. I literally had a half-day meeting with the Home Office on the Hillsborough project that we did a couple of years ago, where they were absolutely insistent that the markers had to go down that left-hand edge. They would not accept things into the margins. It was a heavy meeting. So one thing we shouldn't ever do, though, which we do see quite often when we do this technique, don't ever put the markers into the margins on smaller screens. Because usually, particularly on phone screens, you'll find that margin's too narrow, so you end up seeing like half a bullet. So it's perfectly okay to not indent the markers on a small screen, and then use a media query just to throw them out into the margins when there's enough space for it to happen. The way to actually improve readability on a small screen and to keep separation is to double the margins above and below the list on a small screen, which was actually the compromise I ended up with the Home Office, because they just wouldn't accept the margin, the markers in the margins. I had to bloody well put them on the left-hand edge. So we doubled the margin top and bottom to provide a clear kind of break between that, the rest of the body copy and that on that list. And that's what it looked like, essentially. And we can change those at a wider breakpoint. So we go from something like this to something like this. Just those tiny little details make such a difference. So a couple of other little details that drive me nuts. This is everybody's site footer without the apes thing, obviously. Does it annoy anybody else that the C in that particular copyright symbol appears just a little bit too high? You probably wouldn't notice it unless you were really looking, but you know, you should be really looking. And you look at something like that, you look at that C in relation to the baseline, and all of a sudden, there's something not right with the world. We can fix that with just a little bit of baseline shift. So we can shift that copyright symbol just a little bit down. It doesn't want to go all the way to the baseline. It just wants to go a couple of pixels above it, just so to kind of fool the eye that it's kind of more or less sitting on that baseline, partway between the outer circle and that little C. Now, we can do this. This is, by the way, is exactly what CSS relative positioning was designed to do. These little kind of visual tweaks where we wanted to move something in relation to where it would normally be in the normal flow. Now, a technique like this, it does require an extra element, but, you know, devil's in the details. You can see the difference now. And once it's been pointed out, once you start seeing typography, you can't unsee it. Notice here how, with this particular typeface, which is Jubilat, which is what I use on my website, notice how those parentheses drop a little bit too far below the baseline in relation to that letter C. I want to fix things. I want to fix that with a little bit of baseline shift, which is exactly what I want to do. I can shift it up in relation to the baseline. And just the size a little bit too. I think it's a little bit big, so let's just make it a little bit smaller. How much you do this is going to depend on the individual typeface. Now, again, this technique does require an extra element, just wrapping around those parentheses. But, you know, to be honest, that's okay. Ignore what I've written in two books about not doing this kind of stuff. Nobody's going to be thrown 3,000 years into the future just because they use a span, right? That's kind of what I used to think, and now I'm a lot more pragmatic about things. So if you compare this original non-shifted parenthesis with the shifted alternative, it just looks better. It just feels better. Little things like this. Has it ever bugged you that dashes just sit a little bit too close to the baseline, especially when you're using them between two different numerals? So again, we can just shift that. We can shift that too. Again, another element. I could go on and on and on about these little typographic details, but I suppose the important point that I'm making here is that I've always believed that we all have a responsibility when it comes to the final implemented design. It's not something that's just done when the PSD is handed over by the design team for somebody to implement. And I've always believed that it's vitally important, really, that developers as well as designers should understand design-related issues, in particular typography fundamentals. Because developers, right, you love rules, right? You love knowing this kind of stuff. And I think that if we can all understand these issues, then the integrity of the design is going to be far better maintained when it reaches the final product. So let's just kind of recap, I suppose, for a minute. The voice hasn't held out badly, has it? It's a little bit croaky. And so is the beer. I guess some of the biggest frustrations that both designers and developers feel, and often the frustration that comes between us, I think it can really be solved by a better understanding, really. A closer working relationship and a better understanding of what each other do. And particularly when we come to actually try to communicate design. You know, I've written quite a lot in the past about designing in the browser over the years. But this isn't really about that. It's more about accepting that if we're going to design and develop our best work, then we need to really think differently about how we work together. And I've been working on a whole bunch of different projects recently, and I've sort of come to realize that the best projects that I've worked on are not the ones where designers work in one team and developers work in another team. It's where the client creates a project team and everybody works together. I find those much more satisfying and we get a much better result at the end. So really, it's about communication and it's about collaboration and it's about understanding what everybody does. And the type of graphic stuff is really just a vehicle for that. And I suppose really far from wanting people to, from developers to keep their dirty hands off my designs, what I really want, what this should really be about, is for you to get your hands on my designs more often, particularly in the preliminary stages where we start thinking about type size implementation, color contrast, maybe layout decisions, and how they actually impact when things actually get implemented on real devices, you know, where they're going to get seen. And really so that designers can ultimately stop wasting so much time making endless design artifacts, and then actually just get on with the real job, which is actually designing. So, thank you very much for what's been a really good evening. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.